Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montes of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. Oh, hello. Welcome back to the podcast. We have a great one for you guys today. This week on the podcast, we have Katherine Herbison, who is a health coach behind the brand Choosing Balance and one of the amazing ladies behind the Embracing Balance podcast. So today we're chatting about Katherine's personal health journey with an eating disorder at a young age, going through recovery, and then finally coming to the intuitive eating and health at every size approach. We're also discussing how a lot of people assume that in order to have a healthier relationship with food, they just need to learn to control themselves around food more. But actually, we're talking about how controlling your food does not actually lead to food freedom and peace. Instead, it leads to feeling more out of control and the never-ending dieting cycle. We're also chatting about trust and why so many people have trust issues around our own self-worth, food, and exercise. And finally, how making peace with your body size requires letting your body get to its natural size and giving your body permission for wherever it wants to be. But before we get to the episode today, I wanted to give a huge thanks to BetterHelp for sponsoring today's podcast. Real Talk with Dana listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Dana. And another big thanks to Ned, who is also sponsoring the show today. Ned offers small batch CBD products and hormone balancing blends from the finest full spectrum hemp, and you can grab 15% off at HelloNed.com with the code Dana. If you're looking for a resource to improve your relationship with food and your body in the new year, Christina and I have created and are launching our rebooted 12-week program to help you break free from dieting and finally make peace with food and your body, and to help you troubleshoot the areas where we commonly see people getting stuck. We'll show you how to recognize the diet mentality in all aspects of life, how to spot real nutrition information versus just dieting and weight loss advice, and how to start substituting behaviors that will promote your long-term mental, emotional, and physical health. We're also going to teach you how to start making food, exercise, and lifestyle choices from a place of self-care rather than fear and self-control. You'll also learn about emotional eating, cravings, demystifying nutrition myths and fads, and how to break free of the constant cycle of restriction and, quote, falling off the wagon, the heaviest air quotes I could ever give you, and so much more. But this isn't just about education. This course is action-oriented, so you can actually start doing something about this right now. It includes weekly video and audio lessons, so if you like podcasts, this will be right up your alley, weekly worksheets and action steps, the support of a private Facebook group, and you're also getting a one-on-one coaching session with either Dana or Christina, which is also included in the course. So here are a couple of things that people have said about our last round of the course. I almost always felt like I was in church and the pastor was talking to me. I felt like the content resonated so deeply. I also love how supportive of one another the other ladies in the group were. I just love all you both have to say. I wish everyone in the world could hear this. You guys are so giving of your time and talents to help us. Thank you. So, if you're ready to join these other successful participants and break free from dieting and finally make peace with food in your body, you can apply for my and Christina's Break the Diet Cycle online course, which is linked in the show notes. Well, Katherine, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I'm super excited to talk all of the things with you.
Oh, thanks for having me. I am so excited to be on here today.
Awesome. It's so funny because when you guys interviewed me like a couple of days ago, we just like went and went. And now, even though we've only had like one full conversation, I feel like I know you pretty well. So I feel like very relaxed and at ease in this conversation.
Oh, yeah. I was telling you everything about my day before this. So
love that. Well, for the listeners who don't know you, why don't you introduce yourself? And I would love to get started by talking about your personal health journey.
Yeah. So my journey, I would say, really goes back to, oh gosh, 10, I was 10 or 11. So quite a ways back. And at that time, you know, I was, well, growing up, I was always a very sensitive child. I'm a very sensitive person, a highly sensitive person. And obviously I didn't know what that was back then, but to me, I just knew I was more sensitive. I was more shy, more I felt more insecure as a child and growing up as well. Looking at friends like, oh, they're more popular. What's wrong with me? Or, they have friends. What's wrong with me? Why do I feel so awkward with people? Why do I like being by myself? And I just felt insecure in myself. And then as I got a little bit older, I mean, 9, 10, I started becoming aware of my body and becoming very uncomfortable with my body. I felt bigger than a lot of girls, and I was, I didn't like my stomach. I was just very, very self-conscious. I was not athletic at all. So I just felt like I was stuck. And at such a young age, and I remember distinctly thinking, this was probably I was 11. I remember distinctly thinking like, if I don't change my body, or if my body doesn't change, like, I'm not gonna get married. I'm not gonna, I didn't even think successful, but I just didn't think that I would go anywhere in life at such a young age. So sad to say right now, but I remember just like crying about that. And then puberty hit. And puberty was something I was totally not prepared for. No one really prepared me for it, for the emotional roller coaster. And that was the big thing. And I guess also my body changing. But what I remember most is the emotional roller coaster of remembering I was just crying all the time, and I had no clue why. I remember feeling just very, I was looking, like looking for comfort, just looking for something that was safe and in control. And I just felt totally haywire, on top of feeling very, very uncomfortable in my body and in myself as a person. And so it was the summer between 5th and 6th grade. I decided, okay, I'm going to do something about this, and I am going to become healthier. I don't know exactly what I was thinking, but in my mind it was, I'm going to start eating healthier and I guess work out as well. But the workout didn't come until a little bit later. So it was that summer. I found a book, and it had like calorie counts in it. And I think I just like started copying that book. I don't even know what I was thinking. It wasn't like I was like, I'm gonna go on XYZ diet. I've actually never been on a quote unquote diet. Probably like my 11 days on Whole30 was the closest thing I've done. But I just like started controlling. And I'm the type of personality that when I start something, I don't stop until I reach my goal. I didn't really have a goal, but I just like kept going. And it quickly spiraled. So by the time I started 6th grade, I had lost a significant amount of weight. I was deep into anorexia, and I do not remember much of the first couple months of school at all. It was totally a blur. And side note, I actually grew up overseas. So my parents were Americans who worked in Moscow, Russia. So that's where I lived from when I was really young until I graduated high school. And so we didn't have all of the resources that, we would have in the US. Definitely no American therapists or dietitians or anything like that, or treatment centers. And in Russia, like eating disorders, they don't even have a word for it. So it's just, there's not much to do, and my parents didn't really know what else to do. And so they intervened as best that they could by, making sure I was eating meals and kind of monitoring me pretty closely. At first, I was pretty resistant to it. I didn't want to, but it was really hard when I was living under their roof and eating meals with them for them not to notice. And so I would say pretty much from 6th grade until I graduated high school, I lived in this. I ate regular meals and snacks, but I was extremely restrictive, and my life was controlled by rules. It was rules around exercise, rules around how I lived my life. Like, I remember just like, I can't make any mistakes. I never talked in class because I didn't want to say the wrong thing. I didn't really spend time with friends because I didn't really have that many friends. I kind of shut them all out because I had to get my workouts in. Or what if we were in this place and I couldn't eat that food? Or what do I say? I don't want to say the wrong thing. So I really just kind of like went into myself and became just a very insecure person. And even though I was at the lowest weight I'd ever been, I never broke my rules around food or exercise. I followed everything to a T. I was incredibly miserable. I knew something was wrong. I didn't know that I had an eating disorder. I think that I felt like, oh, I'm not sick. Like, I'm eating meals. I'm okay. And I never saw the true me in the mirror. You know, it was never good enough. And so that's how I lived my life. It was pretty much just like this blur of trying, of just me obsessing about my body and needing to be a certain weight and trying to control that and trying to control myself and be perfect at everything. And really at my heart, what I wanted is I wanted to be okay with myself. I wanted to be at peace. And the issue was before my eating disorder and even in my eating disorder, I thought I had to change myself in order to accept, like me to accept myself, but also to be accepted by other people. Even though I was never bullied, I was never told I was not enough, like none of that stuff. It was all me internally interpreting who I was. And so finally, my senior year of high school, I was, you know, looking to the impending move back to the US and going to college. So there was that change and there were other changes. And even to this day, change is, I don't want to say a trigger because now I don't give in to triggers, but it's one of those, I notice unhelpful thoughts coming up. Or when I start wanting that control is when there's change and when there's insecurity. And so I was in, you know, I was anticipating that change. And I remember I started controlling even a little bit more. Like, okay, I need to lose a little bit more weight. I need to do better in school. I need just like that. I just remember that distinctly. And over graduation, my oldest sister came. She was in the US. I have three older siblings and they were all in the US. She came for my graduation. And she is now a social worker. So she was studying social work, and she's the kind of person that just kind of says it as it is and isn't afraid to say what needs to be done. And she sat me down. She's like, "Catherine, you need help." And I was at a point where I was so miserable, where I was like, "I don't want to live this way anymore. I don't know what's wrong, and I don't know how to change it." And I didn't know that I should go get help or go get treatment. I didn't know what the next step was. I just knew I was not happy where I was and I was ready for something different. Anyway, so when she told me that, I was ready. And that's like such a great place to start when you want to change is you have to be ready and you have to want it. And I remember I had a why. I had a strong why where I was, you know, one day I wanted to have kids. And at, you know, my whole middle school, high school, I never had a period. So I was like, well, at this point, I can't have kids if I wanted to. And I was worried that I'd eternally damaged my ability to have kids. I had other things. I loved to sing, and I was worried that maybe that would affect singing. And I also remember I was like, I just want to have friends. I want to have a girlfriend's night and just sit and watch a movie and eat popcorn. But I was so socially anxious, and also just I didn't know how all that would work out. And so I knew I wanted change. And so when we moved back to the US, my parents moved back with me. And we found some treatment for me. So I took a year off from college. So I deferred my application and I did several months of intensive outpatient treatment for my eating disorder. For me, I had a phenomenal experience with treatment. I know that's not for everyone, but I think definitely the outpatient experience was really, really good for me because I was living at home and being able to experience, you know, put into practice what I was learning in treatment. And similar, like I said, when I set my mind to something, I do it. And so I think the same thing that kept me stuck in my eating disorder, but made me move forward in treatment. So I was in and out of treatment in several months, not saying I was completely recovered, but I was like, okay, I need to follow this meal plan. I'm going to do this. I'm going to restore the weight. And it was really, really, really hard. I definitely really hard with destroying weight, stopping exercise, eating more food than ever. And then from there, I went to college. And so the next 4 years, I just continued to work on recovery and worked with dietitians and therapists at school, and was really blessed by who I was able to work with. And this is all part of the process. It was never this like, I hit this milestone and then I hit this milestone. There were times where I would look back and be like, how am I going to get to this point where I don't feel like I've made any progress like I did right at the beginning when it was dramatic progress. And I remember it was around my summer before junior year. And I was like, at that point I was like still following a meal plan, still following the rules set up by other people because I didn't trust myself. And I remember my dietitian saying like, you know, she didn't say intuitive eating, but she was talking about just like normal eating and like me being able to decide how much I want, what I want. But that was still really hard for me to embrace and conceptualize what that would look like after so many years, nearly a decade of me controlling or following a plan, but I really didn't trust myself. And then it was that summer that I was training for a marathon. So I always dreamed of running a marathon, and I took a break from exercise and running at the beginning of treatment. But then I was like, oh, I feel like I'm okay. Like I can start exercising again. But still at that point, exercise was a way to control. It was a way to control my body or to feel in control, be like, well, I can challenge this food, but I can still exercise. And it wasn't obsessive exercise, but it was still pretty regimented. And I was training for a marathon and I hurt my knee. 7 years later, my knee still hurts. And I've been working on it. It's been a long journey, and it has, even though it's been one of the hardest things ever, it's been one of the best things. And I think the catalyst to full recovery for me. Now, I'm not saying that someone has to have an injury to fully recover, and I never hope that on anyone, but I have learned those lessons that I really love to pass on to other people. And in that time where I injured my knee, I could hardly walk. I had to drive everywhere. Like I couldn't walk upstairs. My one piece of control was completely shattered. And at that moment, I had to trust my body. I had to trust that I still ate. I could still eat and not exercise. I didn't have to compensate with the exercise. I had to trust that my body was going to take care of me. And I really also had to sit with all of the uncomfortable feelings, because at that point, I knew I wasn't going to go back into restrictive eating restrict. I was strong enough in that. So in those times that I felt really uncomfortable in my body, or the panic of, oh my goodness, I ate that food, what's going to happen? And I couldn't just go to exercise. And exercise is a wonderful thing. It's a beautiful thing and I love it. But I couldn't just like go on a diet or go on an extreme workout plan. I had to sit with the really uncomfortable feelings and work through them. And I think there's no other way I would have done that unless I was literally forced to stop exercising. So that was a huge moment for me in learning to listen to my body, learning to trust my body. And it was amazing. What I found was that I could still eat and not gain a ton of weight and eat the same things. I was still okay not doing extreme exercise all the time. And so those were really powerful lessons that I learned. And then that started I guess that was the beginning of my journey to intuitive eating and intuitive living. It was at that time that I started surrounding myself with blogs and podcasts and books that supported the way that I wanted to live, which was non-diet. You know, eating all foods are okay, that there isn't one size. Because I remember it was a point in my recovery where I was like, well, what is right? You know, we hear all these messages about this is what you should eat, shouldn't eat. And I was like, maybe that's right, but I know that I don't want to have any restriction whatsoever. So what is right? And that's when I found intuitive eating. So this is all kind of like happening together. Again, it's not a linear thing. And I heard about it through a podcast and I was hooked. I was absolutely hooked. And I was like, finally, this makes sense. Like, we can eat normally. And thankfully, I had growing up, my parents were very normal eaters. My mom is a normal eater. And so I had that example of like, okay, so like my mom eats normally. She eats all foods. She listens to her body. She's not exercising crazily. And, she hasn't dramatically changed her body size since the 20 years that I've known her. And so finally was like, okay, here's the proof. It's like scientific proof that you can eat what your body is telling you. You can trust your body and you're gonna be okay. And so I just started eating up, for lack of a better word, no pun intended, eating up, everything intuitive eating. And then I was self-taught everything about intuitive eating. I never worked with an intuitive eating counselor or therapist. I wish, I think at the time, if I'd known about coaches, I totally would have, but I didn't. So I just did it on my own. And that was, oh gosh, that was probably 6 years ago, 5, 6 years ago. And ever since then, it's just been that slow process of learning to listen to my body, to trust my body. And this is the beautiful thing about intuitive eating, and what I have personally learned is that as you start being intuitive with food and with eating, it infiltrates other areas of your life. And part of the concepts of intuitive eating are that, it is not just about food. Yes, there's hunger, there's fullness, there's types of food, but it also is about emotions, and it's about exercise, and it's about nutrition. And for so long, I had learned to tune out my body. That's how you literally survive an eating disorder, is you tune out your body. And I had no trust in myself whatsoever, in my heart, in my body, in my mind, in my personality. So when I started trusting my body with food and trusting that my body was going to take care of me no matter what I did, I started trusting myself more in other areas of my life and listening to my body and listening to my heart more in other areas of life, my life, which it goes into how I'm doing what I am today as being an entrepreneur, a health coach. My work with Beauty Counter, all of that stuff ties into starting with intuitive eating. So that's kind of where I am today. I would say 10 years after starting my journey of recovery, I'm fully recovered. I always say that recovery is 100% possible. It's a journey, it's slow, it's hard, but it's when you totally surrender and you let go of that control and you begin to build up new proof that you can trust yourself and start working through the thoughts that you've held for so long. That's when you really start making strides in recovery.
Okay, let's take a quick break to hear about today's sponsor, BetterHelp. Let's say you're realizing that you want to do something about your relationship with food and your body, and maybe you want to talk to someone, which, let's be honest, this relationship, or these two relationships that we're talking about, have not been the easiest relationships basically for your whole life, right? There's been lots of ups and downs, probably more downs than ups, and you want to figure out something because you realize that listening to podcasts and following body positive, non-diet on counts on Instagram helps, but it's not enough. You probably have realized at this point that, furthermore, just changing your food and your exercise routine like you've been doing for years isn't going to take care of your mental health, and it's also not going to fix your relationship with food and your body. But who do you talk to? Your friends might all be doing diets in the new year, and your friends might be also going to new gyms where they're talking about diets and counting and all these other things that you know are just a little bit triggering to you, and you don't want to be part of that anymore. And your parents might also not be the best people to talk to because they might have their own struggles with food in their bodies. And maybe you've even thought about therapy or a counselor before, but how do you even go about finding one? What if you don't want to go see someone in person? What if it's really expensive? Like, basically, what the heck do you do about this? And that is where today's sponsor, BetterHelp, comes in. So BetterHelp is an online therapy platform that is 100% privacy protected, affordable, this is a biggie, and provides professional counseling services from thousands of licensed, accredited, and board-certified therapists. So to get started, you fill out an intake questionnaire online, and BetterHelp matches you with your own counselor, who you can see from your own home, either over the phone or in a a privacy-protected video platform. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. And you can get connected with someone in under 24 hours, which is amazing because no more waiting for weeks to get an appointment with a therapist who's in your area who you haven't even met yet, and you don't even know if they specialize in what you need. So BetterHelp's mission is to provide everyone with easy, affordable, and private access to professional counseling anytime, anywhere. So you can get started today, and Real Talk with Dana listeners get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Dana. Not better health, better help. So it's betterhelp.com/Dana. That's betterhelp.com/DANA for 10% off your first month. And today's show is also sponsored by Ned. So Ned's collection of full-spectrum hemp oil products contains CBD extracted from the finest organic hemp plants and is all grown with love on a small 12-acre homestead in the beautiful, bountiful farmland of Colorado. And what's super cool and what I'm super excited to share with you guys today is that Ned also just launched a line called Natural Cycles, which is specifically formulated for women's health. You guessed it. Around our cycles. So the product line is a unique collection of premium CBD products specifically made to bring healing to your body and harmony to your menstrual rhythm all month long, no matter how short or long your cycle is. So you can stop basically suffering through all the cramps, headaches, bloatings, and sometimes extreme mood and energy changes that can accompany our cycles because they are just so lovely, right? And then they can help you get back to living your best life. So the line includes a balanced blend, which you guessed it, is to help balance out your hormones with a blend of CBD, herbs, minerals, antioxidants, fatty acids, and vitamins. An ease blend, which is to help ease menstrual discomfort and cramps with a combo of CBD and herbs like cramp bark, black cohosh, ginger, and cinnamon. A soothe salve, which is specifically for PMS symptoms before your cycle with herbs like lavender, rose, chamomile, ginger, and CBD, of course. And then finally, an energized roll-on, which is to help boost both your body and mind with CBD plus essential oils. Pretty sweet, huh? And of course, like I mentioned last week, Ned is also a fantastic source of high-quality small-batch CBD products from the finest full-spectrum hemp that are independent third-party tested for quality, potency, and purity, which is extremely important when you're navigating the murky waters and world of CBD and you don't really know what's what. And you can grab 15% off your order of Ned products at helloned.com with the code Dana, D-A-N-A. And now, back to the podcast. Thank you so much for sharing that. Like, so many, like, knowledge bombs in there, so many things I want to go into. You talked a lot about, like, control and about trust, and I want to dig into those. And I would love if you could talk about, you know, you talk a lot about trusting yourself and how learning to trust yourself was such a big part of your journey, not only towards recovery and learning how to eat more in tune with your body's signals, but also, like, living a more intuitive and intentional life. And I would love if you could talk about, like, why do so many of us have trust issues in the sense that, like, why is it so uncomfortable for us to trust ourselves? And this could be with, you know, self-worth, food, exercise, like basically the things that our bodies truly need.
That's a great question. Everyone's different, but what I see, especially for women, is that we are surrounded by so much information, so much information that tells us what we should and shouldn't do. And even if we're not intentionally looking for it, we're surrounded by it. And so it indirectly, directly, it becomes part of our psyche that we can't trust ourselves. You know, we hear messages of, oh, you feel hungry. You're not supposed to eat right now. So maybe you're just thirsty. Maybe it's just emotional eat. Like, it's just emotions, and, you know, be wary of emotional eating. And so what that does is it makes us fearful of what our body is telling us. When those messages out there are saying, you should do this, you shouldn't do this. And so implicitly, I think that's what happens. Even if the messages we hear aren't saying directly, don't trust yourself or you can't trust yourself, just by saying you should do this, or when your body says this, you can control it, you can curb your hunger, you need to challenge or, you know, learn how to curb your cravings, things like that. It's the message that's being communicated is your signals aren't reliable. I think also, especially for, I think a lot of women struggle with insecurity because we live in a world that glorifies the ideal female figure, also the ideal female personality, but also men and women. American culture, and I can't speak to other cultures, but American culture really puts a certain type of person on a pedestal. Those people who are those, when you think of successful people, it puts those people on a pedestal. And so anyone who doesn't, who isn't super outgoing or busy or like this hustler or this person that's the driver and the one that's in the spotlight, they can feel insignificant and insecure in who they are. So we have these image of the ideal female body and what we need to do to maintain that. And then we also have this message of, you know, this is the person you want to be as far as success. So that built up a lot of insecurity. And then what do we do when we feel insecure? We look for, well, how do I make myself better? And diet culture, wellness culture has a lot of messages about that. We don't even have to look for it. It comes to us and we just kind of snatch on to that.
Yeah, it's so tough. And then also, you know, this conundrum kind of trust and what it leads to, kind of the polar opposite of that is this aspect of control that so many people are looking for, whether it's with an eating disorder or controlling our food or controlling our exercise, like you mentioned, and specifically with our, like, basically our relationship to food and our bodies. I hear this a lot, and I'm sure you hear this a lot too with your clients and with doing interviews for your podcasts and stuff, but like a lot of people assume that in order to have a healthier relationship with food, they just need to learn to control themselves around food more. So what is your response to that?
Oh, I'm just smiling. I did a workshop that will soon, I did a live one and it'll soon be available on my website as well. So if people want to download it along with a workbook, and this was about how to have freedom with food without feeling like you're losing control. And because that's the big fear of if I listen to my body and I let it lead, I'm going to lose control. And so I have to control. And I just did an Instagram post about this as well. And okay, so like in this workshop is I talk about, and with my clients and such, I talk about how control actually makes us more out of control. Because when we have to understand the body, and what was so helpful for me in my own recovery and my own intuitive eating journey was learning the facts about my body. The facts about my body, our body, not just me, this applies to every person. Granted, there are situations with chronic illnesses and stuff that some, you know, I'm not going to go into all that. Dana, you're more probably an expert at all of that. But for all people, our body is designed to take care of us. I'm sure no one is surprised at that, but let's say for hunger and fullness, our body is designed to signal when it senses that we're in famine. And that does not mean you have to be eating nothing. That doesn't even mean you have to be eating, you know, on a really restrictive diet. That just means you're not eating enough for you. And that means, you know, all different things. But your body is not getting the energy that it needs, whether that's from carbs, whether that's from calories, whatever it is. And so when your body senses that famine, it's going to literally send messages to your body to prompt you to eat. It's going to make you salivate. It's going to make you think about food. It's going to, can't think right now. Yeah, think about food, salivate. Just basically, you're going to want to eat. And for some people, they think, oh, I can't, like, I can't stop thinking about food, all these things. So it probably means that you need to eat, or you've been restricting a certain type of food. And that's a whole nother thing. So we have our body that when it senses famine or it's not getting enough energy, it's going to signal because it wants our body to be at homeostasis because that's how it functions best. The book, Health at Every Size by Linda Bacon, she talks about how she talks about set point theory. And set point theory is the weight, or set point range is the weight that your body can maintain with little to no effort. It's a pretty big range, but it means that you don't have to tightly control anything. And it's controlled by this system that your body has when it notices it's in famine. And she describes it as a thermostat and how, you know, we have a thermostat and the thermostat is going to do everything it can to keep the room at a certain temperature. So you open the window, so it's going to work a little bit harder to maintain that. You close the window, it's going to change. And if we fill around too much with that thermostat, then it's going to break. It's not going to work as well. Our body is the same thing. So it has a thermostat in it. And when we eat enough food, it's going to maintain. When we don't eat enough food, it has to work harder. So signaling our body that we need food. And if we mess around with that too much, then the mechanisms are going to break. And a lot of things can happen due to that. So it was helpful for me to understand this concept of set point theory and how our bodies are going to do everything it can to keep us there. So all that to say, going back to this concept of control, is if we try to, we can't control. We can't, because if we try to control, our body is going to work harder to signal to us that we need food, which means we're going to be thinking about food a lot. We're going to, if we do allow ourselves to eat, we're just going to eat everything in sight. That's why I say never let yourself get too hungry before you eat, because you might eat more than you actually need it. And not something to be afraid of, that it's okay if you eat more sometimes, but you're going to probably eat a little bit more than you needed. And then also with that is if you restrict certain types of foods out of control, you're going to think about those foods more. So again, Dana, you're more of the scientist than me. So I explain all this stuff in very layman's terms, but you know, there've been those studies about how food is addicting. Certain foods are addicting. But what I think is so interesting is that what these studies don't talk about is how when you deprive someone of, let's say, ice cream for a long period of time, and then you give them the ice cream, the pleasure sensors are going to be heightened even more than if they were eating ice cream on a regular basis, like every day, and then they had ice cream. So anytime that we deny ourselves a certain food, it's going to be more pleasurable and more desirable. And I mean, we hear this all the time. People of like, oh, you know, I'm not going to have sugar. And let's say like, okay, my one experience with Whole30, I did it for 11 days. And then I realized that, no, this is not good for me. It was very triggering for me. And I was like, I never, ever can do anything like this again. This was several years ago. So I've learned a lot since then. But I remember that day when my husband and I were like, okay, we're done with this. We got sushi. We got wine. We got ice cream. Like, we went out for ice cream because it was like, oh my goodness, we can eat all this food again. And that's like, people talk about that as a bad thing. Like, oh no, I lost control. But that's not what it is. It's literally your body is like, I've been wanting these foods. I need carbohydrates, or I want pleasurable foods. And so I think people see those situations where they're like, oh, I was so good on cutting out XYZ food, but then I went overboard. So that means I can't trust my body, because if I let myself, then I'm going to go overboard. But knowing our bodies, how our brain works, how our physical body works to help us stay at homeostasis. If we eat food, if we're nourishing our body and nourishing and responding to our cravings on a regular basis, our body is going to stay stable. And we're not going to have these extreme cravings for something. We're not going to, you know, binge on certain foods, because our body knows it's being taken care of. And you get to a point where you're like, I could have a donut if I wanted to, but if I don't want to, I don't have to have it. So that's why I say that control really backfires. And when we let go of control and we work on listening to our bodies, which is really, really hard. And then the next really, really hard thing is to take action on that and honor it with grace and knowing that, especially if you're starting out, you're not going to get it right the first time. And there's no right or wrong. But giving yourself grace and practicing listening to your body, then you are going to feel, quote unquote, more in control than if you try to control it yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that, you know, letting go of control and leaning into that and truly trusting your body to tell you what it needs and listening to those things, and then, like you said, taking action on those things can lead to you, maybe not never, but, you know, 95, 99% of the time, never feeling out of control around food ever again, which is, you know, so funny because this time of year, I mean, it's like, you know, towards the end of January now, but all the diet culture marketing, you know, every single protocol, detox, whatever you want to call it, reset that's out there is like, do this thing and you'll get in control of food. And then naturally, if it's an elimination style protocol, afterwards, people feel out of control around all of the foods that were on the no list or the limit list or whatever, because they've just been following the rules. And then afterwards, of course, your body is like, oh my God, I'm gonna, you know, treat myself by eating all of the things I wasn't allowed to eat. And then you feel out of control around the foods that you, you know, quote, treated yourself on. Even if it's like, you know, on some of these protocols, it's like cut out eggs, cut out beans, you know, cut out whatever, in addition to more, let's say, fun foods like sugar and, you know, desserts and stuff like that. And so then we come to associate these foods as bad foods that can make us gain weight and inflammatory and whatever the buzzword of the day is, right? And then anytime we then eat that food, we have that association with the feeling of out of control. And instead of just being able to eat one or two donuts and be satisfied, we're eating the entire box of Krispy Kremes or whatever it is, and then being like, oh my God, what happened? Like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I control myself around food?
100%. It's so true. And it's one of these things where you really just have to, you have to take a bold step of faith. And because it's not what our culture says, it's not what we hear all around us. So this is an act of, all right, I'm just going to give this a try and see how it works. And I promise you, if you give yourself time, you're going to be really, really happy. Because just like you were saying, like, I'm going on this detox or cutting out XYZ food. Okay, I'm done. I'm going to eat all the foods. And then you feel guilty. And so then you're like, well, I'm going to start controlling a little bit. I'm going to control again. And that's that diet cycle that the diet binge cycle that we talk about a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we say, you know, take a leap of faith and trust yourself and, you know, learning to tune into your hunger and fullness signals. And yeah, like there's a lot of great free resources out there, books, podcasts, whatever. But like, for most people, in order to really dig into this stuff, you need to work with someone. And so whether that's a, you know, non-diet nutritionist, dietitian, health coach, counselor, like therapist, we're always saying on this podcast, and I'm sure on yours too, like digging into this with either an eating disorder therapist or someone who specializes in like non-dieting nutrition or something like that, really going deep into it in ways that you didn't even think of before, like having someone there that you can, who's an impartial third party observer, kind of, right? That can just, you know, bounce ideas off of you or prompt you with things that you never thought would be tied into it. Because a big part of recovery and figuring this stuff out is like, you know, in addition to having a why that's driving you forward, it's also looking back to what were the whys that drove me to have these behaviors in the first place. Because if you never figure those out, and this is kind of similar to my approach in nutrition, is like, let's figure out the root cause and then kind of go from the bottom up. If you just address the behaviors that are going on now that you would like to get out of, let's say, and get out of that diet and binge cycle, but you don't address the, you know, perfectionism, the need to control, the need to, you know, feel worthy in this world, or any of the many things, including like trauma and many deeper things that can go into having disordered behaviors around food and controlling around exercise, whether it's a full-blown eating disorder or not, those things need to be addressed if you truly want to create a future which is going to be sustainable and have a peaceful and kind of harmonious relationship with food and your body and exercise for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. And that, you know, that's the part that I don't even talk, didn't talk much about in my story, but it was, there was a ton that I worked on mindset wise, because especially if you have been chronically dieting or have had a disordered relationship with food for years, the longer that you've had it, the longer those root issues, those deeper motivations, those fears, those insecurities, the deeper that those are and the more ingrained they are in your mind. And for me, you know, it had been almost 10 years that I had to, I mean, really, it started when I was, before my eating disorder started, those thoughts about myself and my insecurities and stuff. And so, yeah, I talk about that a lot with my clients of, okay, what's, just like you were saying, like, what's the why? What, why do you want to challenge this fear? But we have to identify what is the story? What are the thought patterns, the fears, the beliefs that kind of prompted you to this disordered relationship with food? And the one I talk about a lot is body image. I feel like my own struggle with body image for years, and a lot of my clients as well, because that's part of the process of healing your relationship with food, especially for women, because our relationship with food is so intertwined with our body image. And maybe it's just the clients that I work with that are drawn to me, but a lot of it is motivated by wanting to be a certain size. And so I think it's really important to understand the beliefs that prompted you into this, and the beliefs about your body and the need to control, or the fears about what will happen with your body. But it's also really helpful to understand the messages around us that have influenced those beliefs as well. So that's when I do a lot of work on the, you know, what is diet culture and the messages that we hear, because they're more implicit than we think.
Yeah, definitely. And then I saw on your Instagram, maybe it was last week or like 2 weeks ago, but you posted something about how making peace with your body size requires letting your body to get to its natural size. So I'd love if you could talk about that.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so I mentioned before about set point weight range, set point theory. And I will say this is not just some, you know, nice theory or like this great idea. It's actually like scientifically based, and I would recommend people read Health at Every Size and Eating, Intuitive Eating for that. So set point weight is a weight that you can maintain with little to no effort. And that means not having to go, you know, restrict certain foods out of fear of gaining weight. It means not having to do extreme workouts. It, you know, it really means working with your body and honoring what your body wants to eat, how much it wants to eat, doing movement that gives life to you, doesn't take away energy from you. And this is the weight that your body, once it finds, is going to do everything it can to stay within that range, as long as you're listening to your body. Now, remember that thermostat that I mentioned before. If we wiggle around too much with that, with yo-yo dieting or going on that diet restrict cycle or the diet binge cycle of, I'm going to go on this diet, you know, it doesn't have to be a specific diet or just more restricting. And then, you know, you try to have self-control and then you give in and then you binge and then you're like, well, I need to have control again. So you go on a diet and it's this cycle. That will mess up our thermostat, and that'll mess up, you know, where our set point is, or it will also signal to our body that we're not taking care of our body. And so it's not going to send us reliable signals. So this is when you really work on healing your relationship with food, making peace with all food, listening to your hunger and fullness, listening to your cravings and such, honoring your body with exercise that works for you. Your body is going to find that weight that it feels best at. For me personally, in my experience, it's taken me a while to find my natural set point weight. And I think I have found it at different stages, but then life has changed. I've gotten older. And, you know, so I personally, my story was I had to restore weight in treatment. So I got to a point, I think it was like a BMI that was stable, which BMI, not the most accurate, but it was kind of a measuring tool for them. So that was pretty stable. And then as I let go of more control, and not in a way to say, like, to scare anyone of like, oh, if I let go of control, I'm going to gain weight. But the more I let go of control and listened to my body, became more in tune with what my body was telling me, then my body kept settling. And in a good way, I got my period. I started looking more like a woman than like a teenage girl. And so I was like, okay, my body is kind of where it is at. And I think it's when I fully embraced intuitive eating in my mid 20s. I think my body really did finally settle with where it needs to be. But the beautiful thing about your set point weight is that, again, it's a range and it's a pretty big range. And so it really takes into account those different life stages or different things that are going on in life. And what's been amazing to me is these last 7 years where I've had this knee injury where I'm not kidding, like I literally can hardly do any cardio. Sometimes walks are really hard for me. And I have gone through seasons where I've been able to exercise more. I've gone through seasons where I don't exercise much at all. I have gone from running being my only thing to embracing yoga and Pilates or stretching or going on some walks. And my body hasn't drastically changed. Yes, it's changed. I think just, I don't know, to fit in within that range, or because I'm giving myself more permission to let my body be where it's supposed to be. But I haven't blown up, for lack of a better word. And I think that's a lot of fears for especially the women that I talk to, where it's like, if I let go of control, if I practice intuitive eating, I'm just going to blow up. I'm going to just keep gaining weight and I'm not going to stop. And I feel like my own journey is just this perfect example of like, you're not, like, your body wants to take care of you. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but yeah.
A lot of that, and we don't even have time to go into this, but a lot of that is tied into a huge fear that people have around gaining any weight, right? I mean, even by just saying and like kind of trying to like reassure people like, oh, you're not going to blow up, right? Like some people think that's literally a death sentence, right? And then when we go into, well, of course people think that's a death sentence because the medical institutionalized weight stigma that exists and then cultural weight stigma and, you know, all these other things and the belief of the like thin ideal. And we already talked about the, you know, ideal body, the ideal personality in American culture and everything like that. And we feel that the farther that we get away from that, the less attracted, the less worthy, the less, likely we are to find a partner to spend our life with or friends or, you know, have people criticizing us all the time. So just, you know, like a million ounces of compassion goes out to everyone because like, of course you want to lose weight. And actually I just did a whole podcast on this last week. So you guys have probably already heard me wax poetic about this, but you know, a big part of worrying, oh my gosh, am I going to gain weight? It goes back to the aspect of control. It's like, you can't make peace with your body size if you're constantly trying to control it or constantly worrying that it's going to do something that you don't want it to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And it's hard. And that's where body image work is really, really hard. And I tell all my clients that. And it's okay. It's okay if you want to lose weight. It's okay to what I talk about a lot is mourning your smaller body or mourning the ideal of a different body than you have now. But it really goes to, I think what really, really helps is going beyond your body in the sense of going beyond just the looks, and it's like, what do I get in my recovered body or my healthy body size or my set point weight? What am I given? And when I have been able to do that, I see that I never want to go back to my smaller body. I don't even want to go back to my body 5 years ago, because life is so much more full right now. I probably wouldn't be married if I probably wouldn't have met my husband if I didn't, if I tried to maintain the certain size that I had. I probably wouldn't be able to have kids. I mean, there's just so many different things. And besides that, just like the presence of mind, when I just don't have to think, spend all my day thinking about how am I going to control this body? And I know that's hard. It's really hard to accept that your body size doesn't matter. It's really, really hard, but it goes with learning to trust yourself and also learning to treat yourself with love, self-love, and self-compassion. And I think that's what all of these years of intuitive eating and intuitive living has taught me, that every decision that I make comes from a place of self-love and self-compassion. And trying to manipulate my body is not loving and not full of compassion. So I think that's another place to get as well, is that love and that compassion that you can have for yourself.
I love that. I think that's a great place to wrap up for now. But before I let you go, please let everybody know where they can find you on Instagram, on your podcast, all the things.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on Instagram at Catherine.Herbison, Catherine with a K, not a C. And also my website is choosing-balance.com. I occasionally blog there, but you can find all of my one-on-one coaching programs. And then the podcast, I co-host a podcast with Victoria Yates, and it is the Embracing Balance podcast. So you can find that on iTunes and all the major podcast spaces.
And I'll be on there in the next couple of weeks too.
Yes.
So you guys
So
can hear me
excited.
rant for like an hour and a half.
Yes.
It's
So
a
good.
directional rant about nutrition and social media and everything. You guys will like it, so.
It always is. When we get talking about something that we're passionate about, it's hard to stop.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring today's podcast. To take the online questionnaire and get matched up with a licensed therapist today, go to betterhelp.com/Dana for 10% off your first month. And thanks also to Ned for sponsoring today's show. So make sure you head over to helloned.com and use the code Dana to grab 15% off your order of organic, non-GMO, high-quality hemp oils and hormone balancing blends.